This is Radio Superior 1959, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Turn around, baby. Let's go once more.
Hello, baby. You guys, dolls, cats, and kittens, it's your old fuddy-duddy buddy on a bearskin rug, Tim Michaels, here to rock your world on a radioactive Tuesday, November 3rd, 1959. Denny Anderson has the 6 o'clock news. The museum guy who wears cool, dark vampire duds will be here about long-gone things. And Machine Gun Kelly is live from a lutefisk dinner. What's buzzing, cousin?
Cruising on over to the din-din, cuz.
That's the squarest remote you've ever come up with, man.
I'm tired of getting pounded and arrested, so I figure I'm safe at a church with fish vittles, you dig?
But what about your rep?
I have no rep, remember? Nobody knows me. Kind of a drag being on the radio, and still nobody knows me.
We're in it for the rock and roll there, baby.
What if the Lutherans hate rock and roll? I may get a Norwegian knuckle sandwich for supper instead of stinky, gelatinous fish, Norsky style. This might be a terrible idea.
Again?
Again. See you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile. Denny's 6 o'clock cruises our way from Jensen Motors. They've got a 1953 DeSoto Fire Dome 4-door V8 with tiptoe transmission for bargain basement at price of $495. Even you broke cats could handle that. Jensen Motors at 13th and Ogden in Superior. Now the coolest cruiser, the DA.
Cugat tells Congressional Committee of cheating on TV quiz show. The Supreme Court mulls over a steel strike ruling. And mayor wants a curfew to curb teen delinquency. We begin our world report from Washington.
This is Jack Bell. A former television quiz show producer told House investigators he supplied questions and answers in advance to contestants on three quiz programs. Producer Mert Coplin identified the shows as the $64,000 challenge and the $64,000 question and the big surprise. Orchestra leader Xavier Cugat told probers he got advance help as a contestant on the $64,000 challenge. Cugat was the leadoff witness at today's session of House subcommittee hearings, which have exposed rigging of once top-rated quiz programs. He says he appeared on the program in 1958 for publicity, but, quote, "Nobody told me in advance that I was going to win any amount of money or that I was going to win at all," unquote. He actually won $16,000. Cugat says, "I know I broke no law. I intended no injury to any person. As an entertainer, I am called upon all the time to make believe, to help make a good show. I suppose the producers of the $64,000 challenge wanted to make it a better show, so they made believe too," unquote. Cugat joined the parade of witnesses before the subcommittee in its expose of coaching, rigging, and conniving on quiz shows. The boyish appearing whiz on the program 21, Charles Van Doren, said yesterday he was coached to $129,000 in winnings. The National Broadcasting Company announced today it has terminated its contract with Van Doren as a result of his testimony. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is Lyle C. Wilson in the nation's capital. The Steelworkers Union lawyer argued in the Supreme Court today that there is no national emergency under the terms of the Taft-Hartley law to send the half-million steel strikers back to work under court order. United Steelworkers Chief Counsel Arthur Goldberg says steel output this year will come close to the figures of 1958 when there was no strike. Quote, "Even if the strike should go on for the rest of the year, and we hope and pray it won't," end quote. Justice William Douglas broke in to ask the relevancy of the figures. Goldberg replied that they relate to the question whether the nation has enough steel to meet defense needs. The Taft-Hartley law provides for an injunction in case of a health or national emergency. Justice John Harlan asked if there is any likelihood the strike will spread to the companies still producing steel. Goldberg answered that he does not believe these companies will be involved because most of them have agreements in place. Legal arguments were concluded before the Supreme Court at 3:30 today. The case was taken under advisement for later decision. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson.
This is Gilman Halstead in New York. Cuban exiles in the United States and Latin America will launch an all-out campaign tonight to overthrow the Cuban government of Fidel Castro. The New York Mirror reported today in a dispatch from Miami a provisional government is being organized to lead the campaign, which will begin with the parachuting of sabotage groups into Cuba. Former Cuban ambassador to the United States, Emilio Nunez Portuondo, now in exile in this country, will be named president of the provisional government. Nunez Portuondo is not available for comment. The Mirror said longtime Cuban general José Pedraza will head the provisional government's armed forces. Pedraza came out of retirement during the Batista regime. He fled with Batista to the Dominican Republic on January 1st. The report said an underground radio will broadcast to Cuba at 8 o'clock tonight announcing the government. The Mirror did not disclose its source. It said the saboteurs will first attack Cuba's vital sugarcane industry and then open up against factories. This is Gilman Halstead in New York.
This is Alfred M. Schock in Washington. The giant Saturn space rocket program will receive twice as much money next year if Congress approves. But Dr. Wernher von Braun, who heads the project, wants even more money. Von Braun and Pentagon Advanced Research Project head Roy Johnson disclosed that they'll ask Congress for $140 million for Saturn next year, double this year's amount. The Saturn project and von Braun's team of scientists are being transferred from Army jurisdiction to the civilian National Aeronautics and Space Administration. In an informal news conference with Johnson, von Braun says the Saturn project could absorb $250 million next year. He says, quote, "It will cost the taxpayers less in the long run if we spend more earlier." He hopes that under the new sponsorship, NASA will get more steam behind Saturn. In Washington, this is Alfred M. Schock, UPI.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news. This is not about our senior citizens. This is about old folks. Nor will I employ any other apologetic pseudonyms. This is about old folks who do not deserve to be apologized for. Theirs is an inspiring existence, a brilliant potential. In Iceland, when folks got old, they used to sit them on a cake of ice and float them out to sea. In Africa, the aged and ailing are, by some tribes, chased off into the desert to die. Of course, such practices sound heathen and barbaric, but I sincerely believe that Americans will look back from some future pinnacle of history and be similarly shamed by our present barbaric treatment of our old folks. The wasteful, disgraceful practice of enforced retirement when men and women are in their intellectual prime, the tragic and terrible putting away of old folks into the sometimes cruel environment of filthy nursing homes. I say to you that one day you and I will be considered just as heathen as we consider those who did it with a club. Our president and most of his cabinet are older than the age at which industry forces a man to retire. The whole idea of determining a man's potential by the number of his birthdays is absurd on the face of it. Dr. Wilma Donahue of the University of Michigan's Division of Gerontology has discovered that persons at 70 are as capable mentally as they were at 50. And Mrs. Josephine Cardona of Miami, 112 years young, does all her own housework and cooking and gardening. She refuses to let the youngsters take over. There is a need to be needed that is utterly ignored by those who try to spoon-feed or pasture the capable old folks. We make them old if we let them feel they are not wanted or not needed. This is Paul Harvey. Good day.
KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Michaels has these words from Jensen Motors.
Jensen Motors in Superior wants to remind you that advertised prices will not tell the whole story, because there is a difference. The used car you buy is only as good as the dealer from whom you purchase it. Reputation and service are most important. Jensen Motors used cars are first quality traded to Jensen's as a franchise new car dealer. Reconditioned and priced right. Let me give you some examples. How about a 54 Ford? Custom line station wagon, one owner, completely overhauled, low miles, $845. A 56 Chevrolet, two-door deluxe, six-cylinder, standard transmission, radio, two-tone cream and black, one owner, new Plymouth trade-in, only $1095. a 57 Plymouth Belvedere four-door, V8 torque flight transmission, radio, new white sidewalls. One owner, it's a beauty, $1,495, or a 53 DeSoto Fire Dome four-door V8 engine. It's got tip-top transmission. It's like new. It's only $495. Wow, great buys for you. And they are all available at Jensen Motors, your exclusive Plymouth Chrysler Imperial dealer at 13th and Ogden in Superior. Denny?
Teenagers out late has stirred public protest to such an extent that an enforced curfew will be part of the city council meeting tonight. Sybil Wade has this report.
Mayor Lawrence Hankins says, quote, "There have been recent discussions on the part of the alderman, the city attorney, and myself as to our present curfew ordinance and preventing the congregating of teens at late hours. It may be necessary to do what other communities have done, hold the parents accountable for their children," unquote. Superior Police Chief Arthur Buchanan agrees. Quoting him, "Formerly it was our system to bring in an 18-year-old for an offense, and if he had no past record, talk to him and attempt to put him on the right track. Now it's our intention to take them all to court. I wish we could get the parents and take them into court, too, for contributing to the delinquency of their own kids." Mayor Hagen says he's read of communities where they've restricted the hours of places where youngsters are inclined to congregate and, quote, "enacted closing hours for hamburger and pizza places, for instance, and other establishments of that nature. I hope we won't have to do that here," unquote. Buchanan, who's been chief of police since the 1920s, says, quote, "We have our share of youth problems, and we're going to take steps to correct them." In reference to the parent responsibility angle, Buchanan says they're studying that now. He says the police department feels that when parents do not know where their children are after curfew, they're contributing to the delinquency of their own child. Quoting the chief, "We intend to get right to the bottom of it." Sheriff Louis Spanik says it's the same thing for Douglas County. He says he believes something should be done to get the teens off the streets and highways after curfew time and keep them off. If this doesn't work, the sheriff says he thinks the parents should be taken into court. Spanik explains that it is the practice of his department in the past several years. In cases when they pick up a teenager, even if it's 2 or 3 a.m., they call their parents and have them come to the office, Denny.
Thanks, Sybil. What time is the curfew?
I don't know, Denny.
Okay, then. Superior is one of 13,000 localities in the upper Midwest to possibly get educational television from airborne instruments. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story.
A DC-7 plane will pick up the telecast signal at 20,000 feet from Purdue University and relay it over a wide area. The five-year operation, beginning in the fall of 1960, will be conducted by the Midwest Council of Airborne Television Instruction. They received a $4.5 million grant from the Ford Foundation and contributions from private industry. Telecast instructors will be drawn from the nation's outstanding teachers, Denny.
So a DC-7 will be flying around in circles, beaming a signal to 13,000 communities at once? How does that work?
I don't know, Denny.
Okay, then. Although the steel strike has hurt the Twin Ports' vessel traffic during this 1959 navigation season, the port is managing to keep its head above water because of foreign vessel traffic. 220 ships sailed to Duluth Superior by November, according to the Army Corps of Engineers. Ocean-going vessel traffic through the new St. Lawrence Seaway to Duluth Superior in October was 34 salties. The salties came from France, Britain, Panama, Germany, Italy, Norway, Liberia, Yugoslavia, Israel, Denmark, and Greece. The ships brought in merchandise and departed with grain and other goods. The number of ore-carrying vessels is considerably fewer because of the steel strike. The traffic for 1959 so far is 4,000, as compared with 4,600 ships for the same period in 1958. Just 312 ships called on the Twin Ports last month. And that's the 6 o'clock news. Good night, everybody, and be kind.
The Magic Weather Ball for this Tuesday, November 3rd, 1959, is, oh, my kind of night, baby, meaning it's going to be cool with a low of 19. That's Gunn's IQ. And windy tomorrow with a high of 30, my IQ. But to know Gunn is to love him. These are the Teddy Bears on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
To love, love, love.
1958 on the Iridora label, the Teddy Bears, and To Know Him Is to Love Him, written by Phil Spector about his daddy-o, daddy-o. It's a great cheek-to-cheeker on the dance party.
Got that right, compadre. Even the fuzzy face cats shave for this one.
Machine Gun Kelly live at the Concordia Lutheran Ludifist feed. How are the eyes holding up?
Man, they're watering. And my nose is watering, too. This stuff smells bad, but hey, the women's auxiliary are all cool gals. Dorothy Erickson is the leading lady.
Call me Dot, Mr. Machine Gun. I just adore your radio show.
Oh, man. The Women's Assembly of Concordia Lutheran Church Kitchen Ladies like my show.
You old smoothie, you.
A new low. I mean, Dot, you and Edna and the other gals in comfortable shoes are great and everything. It's just, I was kind of hoping my fan club would be under 50 years old.
What?
I mean, under 30.
Better. And that smell is the cod that we soak in a nice lye, and then we smother it in butter. That's why we encourage people to wear butter-colored Norwegian sweaters, in case they drip.
My eyes are burning. No one could see if the sweater's Swede or Norwegian.
Oh, my word. You would if you were Norwegian or Swede.
No offense. I don't want to get pounded by a Viking.
Goodness. There are only Packers, Green Bay Packers here.
Mea culpa, Dot.
You know, loot means lie, and fish is North Sea for codfish. You put the two together, and you have lootfish.
You have a goopy culinary train wreck.
What?
You know, lie is used to clean out clogged drains.
I didn't say anything, Dot. Hey, there's meatballs, too.
And mashed potatoes, and gravy, and green beans, and mashed rutabagas, and creamy coleslaw, and bars for dessert. We're serving family-style lutefisk until 8 tonight. You better hurry, then. There's a long line.
Squash, rutabagas, and lutefisk. I guess that's better than a knuckle sandwich.
At least you have a fan club now. Thanks, Big Gun.
Later, alligator. Hey, Dot, you got a lot of young cats and kittens here.
That's the Luther League. They're selling candy. Oh, boys and girls, you must meet Mr. Machine Gun Kelly. He's on the radio.
Hello?
Time for the Silhouettes and Get a Job on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Boom, 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 boom.
me.
I'm gonna go back to the house, hear that woman's mouth,
reaching and crying, tell me that I'm lying about a job
that I never could find.
My parents always tell me, get a job. From 1957, the Silhouettes on Kickin' KUWS.
Now, today in Superior History is Douglas County Historical Society Assistant Curator Gerald Stoll. Do you like lutefisk?
No way, Jose. But it was considered a cuisine of celebration consumed by Vikings after their bloody victories. Those sons of Odin could throw a bash.
Kind of dangerous with horns on their helmets, though.
That is actually a myth, at least in most cases. They were most intimidating just by look, breath, and scent. The lutefisk actually improved the odor of the room.
Okay, then let's start with 40 years ago today.
Yes, of course. From 1919, lovers of music with their play and play with their music, so intertwined that one cannot be separated from the other, will find a most delectable amusement menu laid out for them in The Chocolate Soldier, playing at the Palace Theater for a three-evening engagement. Added interest in the opening performance is the presence of the Superior and Duluth High School football teams and their most ardent supporters fresh from their annual clash on the gridiron at Hislop Park. But these public gatherings were becoming rare, because, of course, in 1919, we all feared the horrors of the Spanish flu. It struck down millions of people around the world, a calamity as bad as World War itself. Astonishingly, more people died from the Spanish influenza than from the bubonic black plague of the 14th century. And that, believe me, was awful.
Because that's what the history books say, right?
Yes, of course. A body would have to be 600 years old to remember the Black Plague.
And 25 years ago today?
November 3rd, 1934. Another West Superior landmark is going. The old commercial hotel being wrecked by the Wilcutts Company. In its day, I recall it was one of Superior's finest and was in what is the center of activity at the turn of the century. Close by were the offices of scores of doctors, dentists, and lawyers. The commercial, famed for years for its Sunday dinners, no lutefisk, was built in 1895 by the Ham Brewing Company of St. Paul, Minnesota. The commercial hotel was located at 602 Tower Avenue. Now, pray tell, it is the Commercial Tavern, known for its 32-ounce bowl of cheap old Milwaukee beer and peanuts in the shell.
Peanuts are tough on the fangs, I guess.
Oh, tell me about it.
Douglas County Historical Society Assistant Curator Gerald Stoll with Today in Superior History.
For the curator, our fangs stuttering KUWS twin with Ray Sharp and Linda Liu on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
Well, now they call my baby Patty, but her real name, was Linda Liu. Well, now they call my baby Patty, but her real name, was Linda Liu. She's so fine, fair, and pretty, you never know what my baby's gonna do. My Linda Liu, when she goes
go strolling down the street. All the cats, all the cats, all the cats turn to look around. Well, now she'll give everybody the eye. You never know what my baby's gonna put down. Everybody always tell me I've got the cutest little girl in town. Because of that chick, Linda Lou, Linda Lou, Linda Lou, tell me, tell me, tell me, tell me, what are you gonna do? I had a real bad dream last night, honey. You said, you said, you said, you said that we were through. Well, now if you ever leave me, you're gonna break my poor heart in two.
Of the KUWS Twinspin. Here's Buddy Holly.
Oh, it, the little things you say and do make me want to be with you. Rain on this crazy feeling, and I know it's got me reeling when you say I love you. Rain on the way you dance and hold me tight, the way you kiss and say goodnight. Rain on this crazy feeling.
Holly, before that, Ray Sharp and Linda Lulu on our stuttering KUWS Twinspin on Kickin' KUWS. Now it's time for the newest feature, Dear Dennis. Ha!
We did not steal this idea. With our first Dear Me is from a woman we call Upset.
Dear Dennis, last night I got the shock of my life. My son, who is 17, has always been a kind, thoughtful, good boy. Very early this morning, I heard Bud,
not his real name,
get out of bed, and I thought he was getting a drink of water. I then heard him dial the telephone. When I looked at the clock, it was 2 a.m. He hung up and dialed another number. Another, and then another. He didn't speak. He just dialed and hung up. I followed him back to his room, and he quickly ducked a piece of paper under his pillow. I insisted he show it to me. He had a list of 15 telephone numbers of people I didn't even know. I finally got the story out of him. He belongs to a secret club called the Antagonizers. Each member calls his list every night between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. Then they report on the reactions at their meeting. I mean, I never. Have you ever?
Never.
He told me the names of other club members, and I knew most of them. I phoned the mother of one of the boys. She said, "Oh, come now. This is nothing to get excited about. It's just a teen prank. Would you rather our boys got mixed up in gang wars?" Well, I believe if pranks like this aren't nipped in the bud, gang wars may be next. May I have your views, Dennis? Sign me, Upset.
Dear Upset, this is not a prank.
It's organized antisocial behavior, which can't be laughed off. It's also against the law. I suggest the parents of the antagonizers insist on a joint meeting with the boys. A substitute program of athletics, debate, or writing for the school newspaper, that's the best. So these kids won't have to get their kicks disturbing people and frightening them out of their wits.
Yes, I was sorely afraid.
So you got a call?
Oh, it's okay. I'm up at that time anyway.
Okay, then. Unless something is done to channel their energies into wholesome and constructive outlets, they will become bored with phone calls and turn to scaring people in person.
Our first installment of Dear Dennis. Good job, Abby. We'll take your prank calls next, right after we listen to growling Conway Twitty with his big 1959 hit, Lonely Blue Boy, on the Tim Michaels Dance Party.
My name should be Trouble. My name should be Woe. For trouble and heartache is all that I know. Yeah, lonely, lonely blue boy is my name. My life has been empty. My heart has been torn. It must have been raining the night I was born. Yes, lonely, lonely blue boy is my name. Well, I'm so afraid of tomorrow. And so tired of today. They say that love is the answer, but love never came my way. I'm writing this letter to someone unknown. So if you should find it, and if you're alone, well, is my name. Remember, lonely, lonely blue boy is my name.
From MGM Records, an unrequited love, has Conway Twitty, whose wife's name is Kitty, by the way, and Lonely Blue Boy on Kickin' KUWS. That was a prank. Speaking of pranks, prank call time. Give the big T here the big tickle. Line one.
Is Mr. Wall there? No. Are any walls there? No. And what's holding up your ceiling?
Wow. That is so stale.
Yes. I recognize that voice. That's Bud.
And not his real name.
Prank line two. Maybe it'll be his mom. Upset.
Is your refrigerator running?
Oh, man. Lame.
Yes, well, you better go and catch it.
That would be upset. Line three.
Hello? Well, do you have the number for WEBC?
And that would be Dot. Back to line one.
Your cow is in my garden.
I don't have a cow, Denny-O.
Well, I don't have a garden.
Do we have any actual listeners on this gig? Line two.
Yes. Yes. What did the vampire order at the bar?
Yeah. Bloody Mary, what kind of dog does a vampire own?
Yes, I know that one. A bloodhound.
It's time to cut out Cats and Kittens. Coming up on the Boob Tube on KDAL Channel 3 tonight, Ozzy and Harriet, then Father Knows Best, Danny Thomas, and Peter Gunn. We'll be back same time, same dog pound, the good Lord willing, and we catch the refrigerator. For Danny Anderson and all the gang, this is Tim Michaels, rockin' your world.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1959, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Performances for tonight's show are by John Munson and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1959 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram and Duluth Herald. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
That's Gunn's IQ. And windy tomorrow with a high of 30. That's my IQ. Ah!
Ah, aha, ho, ho. Okay, then.
Now, pray tell, it is the Commercial Tavern, known for its 32-ounce bowl of cheap old Milwaukee beer.
I feel like Triumph, the insult comic dog here.
For you to poop on.
Okay, then.